Well, hello everybody and welcome to episode number 93 of the Rewatch Project with Hannah and Mike, where we will be covering the 16th episode of the fourth season of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., namely the episode What If. How are you this evening, Hannah?
I am well, thank you, Michael.
You ready to talk some Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
How are you this evening?
I'm good. I feel like I haven't stopped today. No. I've literally just sat down. I'm probably going to have indigestion kick in just a moment because we have literally just got home, put the kids to bed, scoffed tea, done the dishes, sat down and hit record. So it's been quite the roller coaster of mundane domesticity today. I'm happy to report, but I wouldn't have it any other way. But yeah, so here we are. We are talking about, as I say, episode number 16 of season 4. So we're cracking through the show. And Hannah, tell us about this episode. Give us the synopsis and the behind the scenes folks and all that good stuff.
Okay, so this episode aired on the 4th of April 2017. Synopsis says, Daisy and Simmons uncover secrets and lies in a world gone mad. With Hydra in control, they are our only hope to save everyone.
Wow, that lives up to the name. What If?
What If? It is directed by Oz Scott.
Yep.
And written by DJ Doyle.
Cool. Okay, looking forward to this one because we're now into sort of bizarro world, aren't we? After indeed. The cliffhanger at the end of the last episode. So, and I have a somewhat dim recollection of this storyline, so I'm looking forward to revisiting it, or probably actually kind of just visiting it for the first time as far as my addled memory goes.
I remember this in broad strokes, but the detail is what I'm
there's a couple of specific elements I remember. I don't want to say what it is, but I remember the Mac stuff. Yeah. But I don't remember, and I remember some of the Fitz stuff, but that's about it.
I remember more than that, but I'm sure there are things I've forgotten. I have got quite a bit of feedback.
Oh, okay. Well, let's get into it. Well, actually, before we do that, let's remind the listeners how they can also contribute to that. The primary way of reaching us is through email, which you can do at rewatchprojectpodcast@gmail.com. And you can also message us through Instagram or through Twitter at rewatchproj, that's rewatch proj, or you can leave comments on our YouTube channel, which we would also appreciate, likes and subscribes and alerts and all that good stuff. And if you could also give us reviews on Apple Podcasts and check out our friend shows, namely The Iron Sequel, His Film Her Movie, Film Bastards, Entertainment Landfill, Chinstroker versus Punter, The Good, The Bad and The Odd, Talk Without Rhythm, and His Film Her Movie. So be back.
So I'm going to start with our first feedback via Instagram.
Okay. I got really confused earlier by, I won't go into it, but let's just say I don't use Instagram, and I got an email alert, but the email alert was from me to me.
Oh, that was me emailing myself to remember to read
it. Okay, but you were emailing it from the Rewatch Project
to the Rewatch
Project, and that email address is in my name, so I just saw it as coming from my, okay, that more makes sense now. Yeah. I was like, what?
So I didn't forget.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, good. Well, however people want to reach us, that's fine by me.
Indeed. Okay, so this is from Perola.
Okay.
This is definitely my favorite episode of the show. Thanks for a good overview of the influences and sci-fi themes used in the writings, and thank you very much for doing this rewatch. I have enjoyed every episode of the podcast. The only thing I can add to your breakdown is that this type of paranoia episode fits very well into one of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s overall themes besides family, namely who are you really and who can you trust? It feels like Jed Whedon was really trying to top episode 17 of season 1, Turn, 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 which also evoked this feeling of paranoia but without sci-fi elements. Season 3 has a similar episode, number 17, The Team, although not as strong. Even season 6, episode 10, Leap, is a variation on the same
That's
idea,
a great point, yeah.
I think. Great episode and great acting from the entire ensemble, as you said.
Yeah.
I remember when I first saw this episode, I marvelled at how they managed to maintain such a condensed atmosphere from start to finish. Simply a masterpiece and should be considered amongst the best TV series episodes of all time. Greetings from Sweden, Per-Ola.
Yeah, great to hear from you.
Thank you very, very much.
And I think that's a great point. And I think that also it's one of those great episodes where you have to have watched the show. You know, it's, and not just because of plot stuff, just because of so much ground that's been laid. But, and also, synapses were firing off here. This idea, he mentions Jed Whedon, because obviously he wrote and directed this episode, this idea of identity. That was really central to the show that Jed Whedon and Marissa Tanker-Owen did with Joss Whedon prior to this, Dollhouse, which was the Eliza Dushku show, which many of the cast of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. were in. And the idea of that show was, it was a shady organisation who had these people they called dolls. And what they would do is their memories would be wiped. They'd be given a new memory and a personality and hired to go off on a mission. And then when they would come back, their memory would be wiped again and be given a new personality.
Okay.
So it was like an Adventure of the Week show. But the story arc was they start to actually have memories of their real life start to come through.
Okay.
And this idea of identity and who we are and does memory make the man kind of, you know, thing was quite central to that. So that scans completely.
Right, so I will read our YouTube comments next.
Okay.
Silver Surfer, greeting fellow agents. You two always make me smile. Very appreciative of your kind words and wonderful energy.
We are appreciative of your feedback.
I was just about to say the same thing. He goes on to say, such great acting all around in this episode. I really like the Terminator 2 Sarah Connor nod Daisy does with the shotgun.
Yeah, totally. It's like that bit in the... It reminds me a little. It's a little bit of the scenes in the Foundry at the end of T2, but also the bits in the asylum at the opening of the film.
And he also goes on to say, I always found it fascinating that we discover May Fear's death through her LMD's confession to LMD Coulson. She never states that during the show. Otherwise,
yeah,
that's a really good point. I hadn't even really considered that.
What, her fear of death?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, there's a couple of other instances where characters reveal things about themselves to other characters, and it is real because they are saying it based on their memories. I mean, unless there's, you know, they're manipulating. But there's a couple of times, you know, where Fitz says stuff that gives you insights. You know, he talks about how, you know, he's thought about marriage.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's evil robot Fitz saying this.
Yeah.
But it still fits his memory, you know. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting that they do use this device as a way of getting characters to reveal things to other characters that they wouldn't normally do. It's as though they saw the opportunity in that, because one of the things that we talk about, how good writing is when you don't have characters do things they wouldn't normally do just to move the storyline along, you know, mm-hmm. that Walking Dead kind of syndrome. But when you've got an opportunity like this where characters are, you know, able to speak their mind because of a plot device, it's a bit like the musical episode of Buffy, where they would uncontrollably break into song and reveal their inner life. You know, they use that as a plot device to sort of put a cat amongst the pigeons. And I think that it was wise of them to use that here.
Yeah, 100%. Jack Dubb says, fun fact, Ian DeCastica has been acting since he was a child.
Yeah.
One of his earliest roles was in the movie The Little Vampire from 2000.
Gotta remember that.
Where he played a particularly obnoxious school bully. He has always portrayed Fitz as such a wholesome character, but it's always nice to know that Ian has a dark side he can easily tap into if the story demanded it. This episode of crammed full of stellar moments, but one of my absolute favourites is the Fitz LMD sudden switch in facial expression from mock terror to utter boredom / contempt as Simmons is stabbing it. I 100% agree. I love that switch.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it's quite haunting, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I agree. That's a great point. Thank you very
much, Jack Dubbs and Silver Surfer.
Yeah, big props.
Right. This email is entitled... Hello again.
Hello again.
Hello, Hannah and Mike. Fraser emailing you from Edmonton, Canada.
Aha, uh-huh, yes.
Thanks for reading my email out on the show. And yes, Hannah, don't be scared of the X-Files. It's a fun, funny, smart show.
The X-Files is becoming the new Farscape, isn't it, on this podcast? Yeah. They kind of get Hannah to watch it. Or no, The Mandalorian.
The Mandalorian was the
twisting Hannah's arm to watch show.
Yeah, yeah. You will love it. I hope one of the picks... I hope one of you picks the pilot as one of your Saw Bay eps. Hell, do the first two episodes. They work great as a two-for-one. And whilst we don't get our first Monster of the Week episode until the third episode, they give you a great vibe of the show and feel so much more early 90s than the later eps.
Mm.
Are there any shows that you can think of that has early episodes that look like they were made way earlier? So many shows seem to get a makeover after the first couple of episodes. Loving the show and looking forward to hearing your review of episode 15 of season 4 of S.H.I.E.L.D. as I remember that being a goodie. Speak soon.
I've got one that springs immediately to mind.
I hope you enjoyed our review of episode 15.
Yeah. I've got one that springs to mind.
Okay, go.
Seinfeld. The pilot of Seinfeld looks like it was made in like the mid-80s.
And then the second, that's a good point, actually.
Because I think one reason for it is often... I mean, you've got obvious ones like Babylon 5 where there's big cast changes, but this idea of pilots that like that were made substantially before, often what will happen is they'll change the cameras that they use after the pilot. Sometimes the producers don't like the look of the show and they'll do it. And you see that quite a lot in sitcoms. Like the early episodes of Friends have got a different colour palette.
Mm.
They've got a much shinier kind of late 80s look about them.
Yeah.
And the pilot of Seinfeld has the colour palette of Miami Vice. It's so 80s looking. And then immediately in the second episode, the pastels are all gone and browns and greens kind of come in a lot more. So that's one that springs to mind for me.
I can't think of any like big differences. Like, I mean, you mentioned Friends. The pilot episode, they all look very different. Like Joey's hairdo in the pilot episode versus episode
two. Joey looks different. More like a very stereotypically Italian character. And I think that there are a few. The X-Files is a good show,
obviously,
actually.
Obviously, Jennifer Aniston's hair is very different from the pilot episode to episode two.
I mean, and sometimes as well, what can happen is that there can actually be quite a lot of time between the pilot. I mean, with Babylon 5, I think it was like a year and a half.
Yeah.
Twin Peaks, there was a year between the pilot being shot and the episodes being shot.
Mm.
And a lot of the actors, particularly the younger characters, you know, they were like 18 or 19 when they shot the pilot, and they were like 20 and 21. Mm. And that's a big difference at that age. You look different.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the thing I notice more than the visual styling is more the character being a very different thing, or the feel of the show being very different. Like Parks and Rec is a really good example of that.
Yeah.
The first few episodes, and the pilot especially, basically the Parks Department take the piss out of Leslie.
It's quite
in a nasty way.
The show is much meaner.
Mm.
It feels a lot more like The Office. And I think that they found their... In the same way that The Office itself, the American Office, softened.
Yeah.
They did that. I'm glad that you mentioned, actually, a really similar recent one of those is Mythic Quest.
Right.
Mythic Quest almost goes nice core. It's like it starts off and it is quite... The characters are really bitchy and kind of mean to each other.
Yeah.
But as the show goes on, it's as though the producers of the show realise, actually, this would be better if people were nice.
Yeah.
And that's why I keep comparing that show to Parks and Rec, in the way that it's one of those things where you get to a point where you realise, almost to your surprise, that you've become really attached to the characters.
Yeah.
You know? But The X-Files is an interesting one, though, because I know what you mean, because the pilot of The X-Files... Because when you think about The X-Files, it was considered to be quite revolutionary as far as using cinematic techniques. So the thing about what The X-Files did was, if you think of TV shows up until the early 90s, everything had flat lighting, everything was bright. And what The X-Files did was, it was the first TV show, really, to use shadow. Like, you'd have dark offices and the lights would be coming in through the blinds and the curtains and casting shadows, and there was a real sense of gothic cinematography that you didn't associate with television. But the pilot has that bright, everything's really bright, everything's shiny. Mm. The characters look like they're wearing like quite a lot of makeup.
Right.
And then immediately on the second episode, everything's mute. It's as though they shot the first episode and they were like, we need to change the look of the show.
Right.
And they brought in this completely different colour palette. And it's really funny because the second episode of The X-Files is a very similar story to the first one. So it almost feels like they shot it thinking, hoping maybe that they could actually shit can the first episode and did this as like a second run, but they ended up putting them both out. So you watch it, and the second episode, although it's a different story, thematically it feels like a second go.
right.
at doing it. Mm. And that's an interesting one. And the other obvious one, of course, is Star Trek, the original series, where, you know, it's a different crew. You've got Captain Pike and yeah. you've got Number One. You know, you've got the characters that are in Strange New Worlds, basically.
Yeah.
So they shot that pilot. The network didn't like it. It never aired. It was never broadcast on television.
Mm.
They and then that was in 1964. It wasn't until 2 years later that they reshot it with a new cast with William Shatner and everybody, and it was this, and they put it on the air. And that pilot episode sat in a vault for 20 years,
mm.
you know, and then eventually it got released and people's minds were blown. So people always joke about how there was nearly 60 years between The Cage, the original pilot of Star Trek, being shot, and Strange New World starting. And they say it's the biggest gap between a pilot and a show going to series in history, because technically that pilot shot in 1964. Well, that's the pilot to Strange New Worlds. That's not the pilot to Star Trek.
Well, I was just going to ask you whether they'll do The Cage.
Well, no, because they've already done. I mean, there's an episode of Discovery, excuse me, in season two, the one that introduces Pike and the new version of Spock and all that.
Mm.
And the previously on Star Trek is The Cage.
Oh, okay.
So the idea being is they refer to The Cage as that's the first episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and the second episode of Strange New Worlds just happened to air 60 years later, which is kind of insane. So that has a very different look, you know.
Okay. This email is called S.H.I.E.L.D.
What could this be about?
I said it like that because it's all in caps.
You sounded like Alan Partridge singing Jet by Paul McCartney. S.H.I.E.L.D.
Hi, Hannah and Mike. Claire from South Carolina here again. I have now reached the end of season 3 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and holy
God, that
shit,
was fast.
Between the show itself and your podcast, this feels like an immersive experience.
Oh, God, yes. So for every hour, well, every 45 minutes of viewing, there's like another 45 minutes yeah. of listening to us. Prattle on.
It's so great to have your companionship on this journey and really feel like I am watching it with you. And I look forward to season 4, as you guys have mentioned, that is a doozy.
Mm.
Thanks again. Just wanted to let you know I'm still out here and enjoying hanging out with you guys. Claire.
That's very sweet.
That's awesome. Hurry and catch up so that you know, we can chat back and
forth. Yeah, well, we'll hopefully...
I wonder how long it'll take her to get to.
Well, I guess it depends on how interested she is in the sorbets that we do. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking now, I've been percolating the idea after hearing that email. If we do another 4, I might pick the first 2 episodes of The X-Files as my 2, in the same way that I did with V. I might group again. Just purely because I'd just like to talk about 90s sci-fi.
Never. Yeah. You?
I know.
No,
I
know. Surely not.
It's very out of character, isn't it?
That is all the feedback I have.
It's feast or famine, isn't it, around these parts?
Thank you to everyone who sent a message in. It really made my day.
It's a good motivator. I suppose it makes sense that we get these kind of pockets, because we'll put loads and loads of stuff out and then people have to listen to it, and then there'll be a natural point where the feedback will come in.
And Mark, are you keeping up?
Yeah, yes, gosh, no. yeah. Mark, good, bad, and the odd. He was surprised by how quickly we were going through. But I think that certainly by this point in the season, I think the urge to continue watching gets... Because I think that there is a slight slowdown after the Ghost Rider storyline, and I think that that's... There's always these points in the season of a show where people could drift off a little bit. And we've done that, you know, with S.H.I.E.L.D. and a lot of shows, and then find our way back. Like Better Call Saul, we love that show, but we haven't watched any of the new season yet. But I know that once we do start watching it, we'll be mad for it.
Yeah, and, you know, and part of me... Because it's taken so long to come, I've wanted to wait until we've got all of it, so I know that we've got all
of
it.
Well, also, I found somebody recommended it to me. There's a 15-minute previously on Better Call Saul that's designed to be watched before the final season, and I feel like I need to watch that.
Yeah, me too.
Apparently, it's like it gets over the first sort of few seasons really quickly, and like half of it is like the most recent season, but... they say it wouldn't make any sense if you hadn't watched the show, but due to the gap between the seasons, the advice I was given was that, it might have been Duncan actually, I can't remember, but it was that it's a really useful memory jogger. And I feel like if I have to take 15 minutes out of my life to understand what the hell is going on, then that's probably a good thing. Should we get into this? Should we talk about What If? And again, we really appreciate the feedback. We do not take this for granted, and we will always read it on the show unless it's really mean. And
I'm happy to say we haven't had any.
Exactly. So if
it's mean about Mike, I might read it.
Yeah.
If it's mean about me, I'll just cry.
Well, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, shall we? So what we're going to do is we're going to hit pause. We're going to watch What If, episode 16 of season 4 of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then we will return and we will have a conversation about it. So see you shortly.
Bye-bye.
CS3P Combat. Player one, choose your character.
Tired of film and television podcasts where the hosts exist in a blissful state of agreement?
Instructor. Player two, choose your character.
Well, you're in luck.
Punter. Round one, fight.
Allow me to introduce you to the Chinstroker versus Punter podcast, featuring two film and television fans from Birmingham, England, who enjoy their media in very different ways. But anyway, that brings us to the end of the plot of Blue Velvet.
The plot. I mean, the main characters are two of the dullest main characters I've ever encountered in any film.
So join us as we catch up on what we've been watching from our own very different perspectives.
Double KO. Round two. Fight!
You can find us at csvsp.libsyn.com, also on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, all the places that podcasts can be found.
Just really,
it's
isn't.
Not visually striking.
No,
just getting confirmation.
It's just inning. That's the third time, though. I mean, is this on?
So we're back. We've just finished watching episode number 16 of season 4 of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., namely the episode "What If."
What if, indeed?
What did you think, Anna?
I thought it was fucking terrifying and awesome, obviously. I love the opportunity for them all to be different than the, you know, real, quote marks, real world.
It's the classic
characters.
Sci-fi thing. It's like, oh, Spock's got emotions this week. Yeah, it's one of those.
I love that they've given Daisy long hair like she had at the start of season one.
Oh, yes, of course.
It's amazing how changing something so little has had such a big impact.
Yes.
I thought it was brilliant. Yeah?
Well, what if I told you I agreed?
Oh, God. Here we go.
I thought it was great. It very much continued the they're really in the shit feeling of the last episode. And there's a number of things going on here that's really interesting. On the one level, on the most basic level, you've got the William Gibson Matrix-y thing. You've got this science fiction idea of virtual reality and living in another world, living another life. You've got that kind of broad science fiction conceit. You've got what you mentioned, the whole idea of the what if element. You know, the idea of that kind of butterfly effect of what's one element of the show's mythology that if we just flip the outcome. And it's funny because, you know, obviously there's the What If animated series at the moment. But they come from, I believe, there were a series of Marvel comics called What If at some point in Marvel history. And the idea was, and they've done these in a lot of, like, they've done Star Wars ones as well, where it's kind of like, you know, what if they didn't, what if Luke missed the exhaust port on the Death Star? What would the Empire Strikes Back have been like, you know?
Isn't the What If comics where Captain America's a Hydra agent and stuff like that?
Yes. But the reason that they got brought into, because the What If animated series is actually MCU canon. You know, all the voices are done by the actors from the MCU movies. And the idea being was that it was the MCU's first step into the multiverse. I mean, the What If animated series, it predated the Spider-Man film and Doctor Strange, which have started to bring in this sort of idea of the multiverse, and Loki as well, that also sort of did a little bit of stuff around that.
Yeah.
So, you know, this idea of this, they're doing several things here, because the What If comic books weren't anything to do with, you know, the Matrix-y world. They were just these thought, these non-canon thought experiments.
Mm.
You know, like, you know, what if Peggy Carter had been given the super soldier serum, you know, yeah, things like that. But what they're doing here is they're using the conceit of the framework as a way of kind of doing an adaptation of this what if idea. And in this instance, it's what if May managed to rescue the girl in Bahrain, obviously.
And I love the fact that basically the whole world is created around May's what if, because she was the first person to inhabit the framework,
and it was designed
for her.
Yeah, she was the sort of the acorn. So you're absolutely right. So the idea being that they first created this as a way of pacifying May when they were holding her prisoner. So it's all kind of offshot from that. Because at first, of course, you know, during the episode, Daisy and Gemma don't get the Hydra theme. They're like, what is Radcliffe's interest in Hydra? But
What they've failed to take into account is that this isn't Radcliffe, this is Ada.
Yeah. I mean, Radcliffe's dead.
Yeah, exactly. And the framework, so I don't want to say too much about, well, I'm not going to say anything about what's to come, because it's something I'll get to later around Radcliffe. But you know, they've got no idea that Ada's been tinkering and fleshing the world out.
Yeah, embellishing.
Over and above Radcliffe. And Radcliffe in previous episodes has sort of exclaimed at how amazing the world is, you know, having gone in it.
Yeah.
And
surprised.
And Ada saying that she had to, that May kept finding the edges, so she had to keep extending it. So
that's right.
You know, it's from her her experiences and her wants and needs and, you know, her emotions.
Well, I mean, the extra random element here is the Darkhold, because, you know, you've got there's the central science fiction idea that if you teach machinery to learn, the problem is that you could lose your control over that, you know. But if you throw in magic, then that's obviously, you know, not going to help. But the other things I liked about this episode as well was I also got a real feeling of, I won't say too much because we might cover this on the podcast one day, but I also got a bit of a vibe of season 5 of Fringe, and I also got a bit of a vibe of V as well. This whole kind of Orwellian science fiction totalitarianism is that, and that's another. So the thing I think that works really well about this episode is that they're using several different science fiction tropes together, and it works really well. Mm. You know, that they're taking a little bit of Orwell and Kafka. They're taking a little bit of, you know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers and Blade Runner, a little bit of, you know, Fringe and V and all of these kind of things. And, you know, and I think it works really well together. But also what you've got in there as well is the interrelationships. And the thing that's interesting as well is because it's this sort of fever dream hodgepodge, it feels like kind of a celebration of the show as well. So obviously you've got Ward there back. And because he's kind of, it's a bit mirror universe as well. It feels a bit like the Star Trek mirror universe, where good guys are bad and bad guys are good.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, Fitz is evil, but Ward's a goodie. You know, it's that kind of opposite week thing.
Yeah.
So, of course, them, particularly in the latter half of the episode, working side by side with Ward, you know, it feels like season one. You know, you've got Gemma and, you know, Skye, you know, and...
Yep.
And I like the fact, this is another example, because I noticed you pointed it out previously, that they use the name Skye when it makes sense. And I think lesser shows wouldn't bother.
No.
You know, they wouldn't make that distinction. But in this world, of course she's Skye.
Yeah.
Because she's never
absolutely.
She's never met Coulson, you know.
Well, basically, Yeah, I mean, before they were a team, Hydra had taken over. So yeah. It's sort of unsurprising that you know, Sky, as opposed to Daisy, would end up in Hydra.
Yeah, and you never find yourself with this show going, well, hang on, if that happened to them, wouldn't they be doing that with them? You know, you don't find yourself doing that. You don't have to hand wave stuff.
No.
You know, and to be honest, I don't think that stuff's that important. Like, I'll let nitpicks go if I'm enjoying myself. But I think it's interesting that the impression that you get, it's not that it's especially clever, or it's not that it's like this huge intellectual kind of tapestry. It just shows care. That, you know, it just shows that the people who are making the show a kind of geeks for the show itself.
Yeah, they're fans of themselves.
And I think that is something when you can tell when somebody's kind of doing a job.
You know, to reference something that you and I have been watching lately, it's a bit like the Light and Magic employees who are doing stuff and coming up with innovative solutions because they really... This is the stuff that they really get into.
Well, it's a level of creativity that's such a burning desire that they would always find a way to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
And you get that feeling with the S.H.I.E.L.D. writing crew. Like,
so that's like, a bit... I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because that's a really big recommend, that series. I thought that was really great.
Yeah, it was amazing. But you think about the writers for S.H.I.E.L.D., like, you can imagine them going... Well, what if we did?
And you can see the love, not just for the show, but for
the detail.
For comic books, for science fiction, for Star Trek, for all of these things that you can see in there.
For Marvel in general,
yeah.
Like they don't really dismiss anything.
Well, the amount of things that listeners have pointed out,
yeah,
like Koenig. And stuff that are part of the universe that I would never even have known. And that's the thing that they do well, is that it's not... I read Marvel Comics a little bit when I was a kid. In the UK, you'd get these annuals, these hardback annuals, and they'd have... So I'd read, like, a bunch of Spider-Man, a bunch of Hulk and stuff like that. But it wasn't like... I wasn't going down to, like, you know, the drugstore every week and getting the comic books. They just weren't available in the UK. Yeah. So I had this kind of broad understanding of the universe. And I've watched all the MCU films and stuff like that. But I'm not one of those people who knows that Koenig was a character in the comic books in the 60s, for example. And one of the things I think the show does well is it uses these things... But he doesn't do it in a way that when you're watching the show, you feel like there's something that you're not getting. You know, sometimes stuff will get highlighted and it'll be like a dun-dun-dun, and you'll be like, oh, I get the feeling that that's somebody.
Yeah.
And like I'll see you do this when we're watching Star Trek sometimes, where somebody will mention and you'll be like, has this character been in it before, like in the original 60s series or something? Yeah. And I'll be like, yeah, and I can see why you're asking that, because they'll be revealed in this sort of,
Yeah,
kind of way. Whereas Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., to its credit, never does that. It's like if you didn't...
It's very inclusive.
And we're evidence of this. If you didn't know that Koenig wasn't a character from the comics, A, it doesn't matter, and B, there's nothing in the text of the show to make you self-conscious and stupid feeling about that, you know?
All it does is, for the people who do know, give them an extra kick, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And things like some of the sort of secondary Inhumans that you saw, I almost get the impression, and I've got no basis for this, that they might have just gone, okay, in this episode, we need to have a Inhuman of the Week, who's got a power that can do this. Is there anybody from the comic, from the, you know, 60 years of comic books that had those powers? And they might even just get, like, you know, an intern or a researcher to look into it and go, yeah, there was this character called, I don't know, Mr. Fisty or something, and who had that power. And they're like, okay, well, let's make it Mr. Fisty, and as opposed to just, like, you know, a random Inhuman 25. So, I mean, I don't know what the mechanism is behind it, but it's good. And I think when you've got this huge
Mr.
tapestry...
Mr. Fisty sounds very huggy-punchy.
Yes. Well, shall we hug and punch it out for a discussion of the episode, Hannah?
Sure.
Okay, then. Right, so...
You try and hug me, I'll punch you.
I'm just trying to find more ways to get the phrase "what if" into the conversation. It's not as easy as it sounds. But I guarantee you, when I do it, it will feel incredibly shoehorned, unlike the appearance of Koenig in the Ages of Shield. So we open up where we left off with Daisy waking up in the framework with Ward. She tries to quake him, but it doesn't work. And he calls her Sky, as we mentioned on before.
I love the fact that he's like, is that what we do now? When she just, like, shoves her hand at him.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if that had been you and me, I would not have let that go. It would be like, well, why did you do it? What were you meaning?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is this some,
who do you do that with?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This, my dream was correct. It's one of those.
You did cheat on me.
Yeah, that's your secret.
You pointed your hand at.
You and your Hydra whore.
You're really Iron Man, aren't you?
So we see that they work for Hydra. And we get to see this kind of Orwellian hellscape. And I think it's interesting, though, that it does echo S.H.I.E.L.D. under Mace a little bit. You know, the propaganda posters are, they're only slightly more insidious than the ones that you were seeing, the kind of, you know, there's no eye in team kind of stuff that Mace had going around. Mm. We see that they're rounding up in humans. We learn as well,
actually, that makes sense, given that Ada was around Mace.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, so, yeah, it could have been like an influence.
On that, you know, but obviously with her wants and needs as the end result.
But I like the fact that the dystopia, the Orwellian dystopia, isn't completely ridiculous. So, for example, you know, and there are obvious real-world comparisons, like the way that they talk about the media, the way that Coulson says, you know, there used to be hundreds of newspapers, but we've realised it's much more easy if there's less, you know, and they're controlled by the government. And you can see, you know, the vilification of the vilifying of the media.
Yeah,
you know, is happening now, and presumably was happening then as well. And again, that's why, one of the reasons I compare it to V as well. Like, you know, the idea of, you know, in World War II, it was the Jews. There's always the scapegoats. There's always the other. Mm. In V, scientists, and the media as well. You know, so there's all that. But it's not that Inhumans are outlawed or being put in internment camps. It's just that it's illegal to not tell people, to not disclose.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that it is clearly a dystopia, but it's not a completely ridiculous one. Mm. It's still, it's one where you could see, it's not like, I don't know, that's a spoiler, but I'm not going to say that. It's one where it's awful, but it's just about livable enough that you could imagine that most people would go on about their lives and just go, well, you know, things ain't what they used to be, but, you know, them's the breaks, and you know, and probably, like in most dystopias, there are certain advantages. It's kind of like, you know, the trains run on time. You know, it's one of those kind of things. So we see that they're bringing in humans. I really liked the Hydra statue in the atrium. You know, that kind of like spindly armed kind of one.
As much as
I would like to have pseudo Nazi imagery in my house, I just think, but on a purely aesthetic, it's like, was it Morrissey? You got in loads of trouble for saying, say what you want about the Nazis, but they were snappy dressers. He was just like, am I not allowed to have a fashion opinion? It's like, well, I'm not that one. So you call Hydra statue in the atrium. And I like the fact that, it's funny, I made this note at the time, but this only makes sense now because I'd obviously forgotten all of this, is that Ward, we learned that there's been some fracture in Ward and Sky's relationship because she wanted to move in and he's being distant, and he says that the reason he's being distant is that there's things about him that she wouldn't like.
Yeah.
And of course she's all like, well, no, she's Sherlock, you're evil. But of course we learn later in the episode it's that actually he's a quote goodie.
Yeah.
You know,
and he doesn't paid up Hydra.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And he's got no reason to think that she wouldn't respond badly to that.
The implication from, you know, May and Fitz and, you know, various other characters around her is that she's quite a hard-ass Hydra agent.
Yes.
So
she's kind of the perfect cover for him in some ways.
Yeah.
And it's, and basically it's, but I like the fact that later Gemma and Daisy are kind of like, oh, once a double agent, always a double agent. Yeah. It's almost as just though the allegiance that he attaches his duplicity, his sort of inherent genetic duplicity to, is arbitrarily decided by his circumstances, and you know?
The one thing I did think was interesting, though, is he's a double agent for Sky. Like, because her tests come back as she's an inhuman.
Yeah.
That's what he turns double agent for.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I didn't remember that.
Yeah, he says it in the episode.
Oh, I know he says that she's inhuman, but I didn't realise that that was his motivation for
He says in the car, that's why I joined resistance.
Okay. Did you, when you were watching, did you remember this, that twist?
Yeah, I knew.
Yeah, that okay, wow. See, that's a level of detail that I don't remember.
Yeah.
I remembered that he was in this storyline.
Yeah.
But I don't remember him being kind of turncoat.
I remembered that he was a good guy and Fitz and May were, quote, bad guys.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that Fitz and May were. And I remember Fitz particularly, because obviously he plays it like a sort of Dr. Mengele kind of, you know, kind of classic, you know, evil scientist sort of figure. But and also I love the fact that it's so obvious that the actress who plays Gemma has got some sort of throat infection.
Oh, yeah. The whole way through I was thinking, that poor girl, she sounds
I thought initially, is that why they had her buried? So they could imply that maybe she'd been, like, screaming to get out and her voice had gone. But yeah.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, and obviously she's meant to look sickly during the episode. So I think that maybe... I don't know. I mean, maybe it was an acting choice, but I don't know. I think she was just sick.
No, because you hear her when she, her voice goes up an octave and she's got no vocal cords there. Like, you know, when you lose your voice, it kind of goes.
And it's funny. It's a very TV thing, because on TV schedules, particularly network shows, you've got no choice. You've got it. You've just got to work through it. Whereas in a movie, you just shoot B footage for the day.
There's a couple of episodes of Parks and Rec where Amy Poehler's, like, quite obviously sick, and, like, not in the episode sick, but she's, you know, got a bad cold.
Really clearly remember there's an episode of Buffy where Sarah Michelle Gellar's obviously sick as well, and she's got, like, a scarf on the whole episode. Yeah. And she's got hasn't got very much dialogue, and every time she does, you can just see she's in absolute agony.
Yeah.
But it's not in the episode, so it's just odd, because the character's being all perky, and it's like, you are clearly sick.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't be doing this. It's just a funny thing. But again, you only really see that.
You'd be going, I can't breathe.
Oh, you don't know. You know what it's like. my God. oh, come on, Hannah. What if I couldn't breathe? I mean,
your oxygen sets were on 100%.
So he says that there's things about me you wouldn't like if you knew. We see them search for database for the rest of the team. We get a lot of stuff of May being a complete hard ass. We see Gemma climb out of the ground and flag a car down, and she immediately goes into science mode. Like, she's sort of got this, you know, nice woman helping her out, but she's all like, oh, you know, you're quite a convincing skin job, you know. And she's got no idea.
Very lifelike.
And of course, the whole DID thing, that's a classic sign of being in a dystopia, you know, the show me cards in Fringe. And you know, and also the real life equivalents in actual fascist dystopias. So we see that they're after the senator's brother, who we've seen before. And I just want to say, he has a bad day in this episode. He gets punched in the face and knocked out. Yeah. He gets woken up by May throwing water in his face. He gets tasered, and then he gets loads of needles stuck in his, every scene. He's just like, oh God, are you just going to, like, put a mouse trap on my balls in the next scene? Like, what else?
From the inside out, doesn't
he? Yeah. It's just like, you're going to give me, like, a really bad Chinese burn on my arm next. It's like a...
You cut this bit out. You know how he goes back into pterogenesis in the sea?
Mm.
Did we see what happened to him after that?
No.
Okay, so I feel like something does happen. Like, it's...
Well, we had this conversation when we watched the episode.
I don't know.
When he came back here, I remember thinking, oh, okay, that makes sense, because... And we can leave this bit in, actually, back into the episode. But, yeah, the guy who played the senator's brother... I think we talked about when we saw the last episode about how we were wondering whether he came back or not, because the actor just seemed a bit too good to be just like in the one episode. And he, so he's back here, and I don't know if that's it. I don't know if that's what I was thinking about.
I honestly can't remember.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out, won't we?
With regard to him, and I was saying in the last episode that it's the minutiae that I think I can't remember. And looking forward.
But again, look, the analogy I used last time was it's like the lyrics to a song is the fact that there might be something one way or another that will trigger that at some point.
Yeah.
So we see May watching the interrogation. We see Gemma escape the cops. We're introduced to the teacher, Mr. Coulson, who teaches about the dangers of democracy, and the girl from Bahrain as well. So we're starting to get a sense of what the kind of the ground zero of this butterfly effect, this change has been. He talks about how Hydra brought law and order. And that's a classic. That's the classic thing, isn't it? Is, you know, the Nazis repairing the national pride and economy. And Trump making outrageous promises to the disenfranchised and ignored upper working class, lower middle class of America, you know. And he talks about how basically what happened was, and it's kind of a little bit like communism, I guess, where he talks about the importance of the state over individual interests. And he talks about the danger of free media as well. Mm-hmm. We see a kid get taken out of class. Nadir recognises May, and he's like, and we get a little bit, and this is obviously a useful exposition dump for Daisy as well, because she hears him say, oh, you're the woman who basically fucked up, and the result of the girl from Bahrain going nuclear is that it made it really easy for people to demonise humans.
Yeah.
You know? He doesn't want to go and see the doctor, who we later on learned, of course, is Fitz. We see... We've got Vijay gets tasered. I'm like, bad day. Then he gets punched, water in the face, and tasered. We see Gemma uncovers a device. And I love all the little details in this. Like, I notice in the newspaper that somebody's reading, there's references to Bakshi.
Yeah.
You know, the shitheel Brit.
And
it's just, there's all this little... it's like they've taken the mythology of the show and just thrown it in a blender.
Oh, totally.
And you get more of that later on in the scene with Coulson when he's going through his kind of scrapbook of broken memories, you know?
Yeah.
And,
Just a little trivia thing that I had read about.
Okay.
One of the newspaper articles in Coulson's folder says Winslow doctor arrested for subversion. The article says the man arrested is a doctor in Cleveland who was experimenting with altering human genetics.
It's Daisy's dad.
Daisy's dad. Though they don't release his name, Dr. Winslow is the new name given to Calvin Johnson after his mind is wiped at the end of season 2.
Oh, God, that is minutiae, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, again...
I kind of love that.
Well, the thing is, I mean, that gets to the sort of central conceit of the rewatch project as well, is that... I would be very surprised if many people get that the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's great about this, having a dense universe where, because you don't need to bother doing that, you know.
No.
And it's like, and I always go back to Babylon 5 where you've got...
satisfying that you do.
I always go back to Babylon 5 because they go one step further where they've got characters reading newspapers and the newspapers will actually, and you'll see them in plain view, will be referencing characters that haven't even come into the show yet.
Yeah.
So there's no way of, even if you paused and read it, you wouldn't understand it. So you literally would have to be rewatching it. So that was put in, not just like, oh, this is for really eagle-eyed viewers. This is, let's put this in for people when they're watching it the second time, which pre-DVD is a crazy idea.
It's very much a, I knew what the fuck I was doing from the very first
second. I think there's an element of leaving proof.
Yeah.
Because I think that it might be, you know what, people might call bullshit on this.
Yeah.
So I need to be able to go, you know, go back and look at this.
What I was doing.
So she goes to see Coulson, Gemma does. She tries to get through to him. She tells him that Tahiti is a magical place, but he reports her as a subversive.
Even though you do see him unnerved by that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there's flickers. And then the student who looks like, I can't remember if it's Kid or Play from Kid and Play. Yeah. I'm like, my notice. That's
exactly what I thought is it too.
Kid and Play, Graffiti's Car. No, sorry, I've written Kid or Play because I'm not sure which one's which.
I wonder if he's related.
Jesus, Anna. What? He's inherited the Kid or Play hair that's passed down generationally.
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
born like that.
I remember when my forefathers first came to this country with the Kid or Play hair. Yes. There are cave paintings of the original Kid or Play hair silhouette. So we see him exercising civil disobedience by graffitiing the car, and basically saying, "Oh, he's saying that they're Hydra aren't Nazis." She's like, "Yeah, they're Nazis," and
that might be the dumbest thing I've ever said.
And I love the fact, and this is where we cut back to VJ. And my note is, now it's needles! exclamation mark. I'm like, I mean, can you imagine trying to go for, what have I done? I mean, like, we see the evil doc and we see that it's Fitz. Daisy sees May deliver the reports on Coulson, which gives her kind of useful information. Coulson has, and we see Ward kind of like trying to figure out what's going on. And again, it's great because these scenes have a double meaning, because when you're watching it, you're thinking, oh, he's tweaked, yeah. He's getting suspicious, when in fact, he's obviously looking at it from the perspective of a subversive, you know? And again, it's great because it just means that Brett Dalton gets to do more, I'm going to play it like this, but what I'm really thinking is this kind of acting. Yeah. You know, it's just kind of... It must be demanding to keep track of all that shit. Yeah, and... So we see that Coulson has a collection of kind of subconscious trinkets and clippings related to his real life. Ward finds Gemma and Daisy, and we learn that he's in the Resistance. We say that he talks about the test results, that she's an inhuman. We get a car chase, which is always nice. Do like a good car chase. Simmons is worried that they have lost them forever, because I mean, she talked and you know, Daisy kind of shares her concern. She's like, look, I've only been here for a day, and I was like, you know, interrogating some dude earlier on, and you know, Daisy wants to leave, but it doesn't work. So they're like, oh dear, we are stuck here. It's that the holodeck is broken, is what's happened.
Yeah. And that's when it cuts to Fitz going into the director's office.
Yeah, and she's like full Bond villain, isn't she? She's like dressed like Blofeld kind of thing.
Isn't that how the Madame Hydra character looks in the comics?
Oh, yes, he probably is, actually. Yeah, I don't know, but I would imagine so.
Oh, I thought it was you that had told me that. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I don't know. I think it was maybe one of our listeners, I don't know. But so they kiss. We get the Green Hydra logo. And it's worth mentioning, of course, that at the beginning of the episode, it's Agents of Hydra, not Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
So I like the idea that... I like it when shows do that. Like the episode of Buffy where Jonathan the Geek has reshaped the universe, he's the hero. And it's not Buffy the Vampire. It's like the opening credits are like it's his show.
Yeah.
Or like the two-parter of Enterprise where they're in the Mirror Universe.
Mm.
And instead of Faith of the Heart, it's this really dark music. And they've got... I noticed they've got a different theme music over the end titles as well. Yeah. This much more minor key, kind of like somber thing.
Well, they've had that the whole way through this season, like the different, like they've had the fire in the Ghost Rider arc,
And then they had the machinery. So what we're seeing is we've had the Ghost Rider arc, we've had the LMD arc, and we're now in the framework arc. Yeah. You know, we see Daisy in the back of the car that Coulson gets into and tells him, and she gets through to him when she pulls the family card, and he says, Daisy. And then there's different music over the end. So any final thoughts, Hannah?
Oh, bring it on and get out of the fucking framework. Give me the red or blue pill, whatever yes. the fuck colour it is.
You want Harry and Ron to be friends again, don't you?
I do want Harry and Ron to be friends again. I don't like it.
No, it's really good. I really like this. I think I like the LMD arc, and I think that the last episode, which was... You know,
was
it's one of the best episodes of the show, and was part of the LMD arc. But I feel that this is much meatier.
It's feeling climactic.
Yeah. It just feels like there's the stakes are high, and I'm enjoying that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, just a quick reminder to everybody, if you want to email us, you can do so at rewatchprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Apple Podcast reviews are always appreciated, as are interactions on our social media, on Twitter and Instagram @rewatchproj. That's rewatch, P-R-O-J. And also, please do check out our friend shows that I listed earlier on. And if you listen to us on YouTube, like, subscribe, and share, and comment. And yes, Hannah, what are we talking about next time?
Next episode is number 17, Identity and Change. Synopsis says, as Data and Simmons struggle to discover an escape route to the real world, the identity of the inhuman leader of the resistance is revealed.
Oh, exciting.
It's directed by Gary A. Brown and written by George Kitson.
Excellent. I will look forward to that. Okay, so let's get out of here. We will see you guys soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.